is to benefit KPFT. So come on out to Last Concert Cafe at 1403 Nance in Houston and enjoy the funk on Saturday, October 14th at 6 p.m. for Electro Love 2017. KPFT, Houston.
Ray Lynch's hypnotic Clouds Below Your Knees signals that it is 8 p.m. on Wednesday in time for So What's Your Story? We are the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Along with our team, co-hosts Mary Edgerton, Warren Holloman, Hank Rubicek, engineer Nicole Rocherlin, intern Titania Gago, production assistant Teddy Puig, and, of course, last but certainly not least, Floyd the Wonder Dog. I'm Greg Audell, your co-host of this gem of a program, and I am thrilled to be your host for the next hour. Every week, we share the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who manage to take us on journeys from the familiar to the foreign. And we get to experience these journeys through the eyes of the storyteller. So sit back and relax, just as we do every Wednesday. But tonight, don't relax too much, because it is our KPFT Fun Drive, and we need you to call 713-526-5738 or get online at kpft.org. Then click on donations, tell us how you're going to pay, and scroll. This is very important, my friends. Scroll to So What's Your Story as the program you designate as the one you want to support. But let's get to the reason you're here, and a sample of what you are paying for when you call in with that donation. I've been looking forward to tonight's guest since I first saw her perform at the Moth Story Slam. It was her very first Moth appearance, and she absolutely knocked it out of the park. I had to accost her as she was coming off the stage to beg her to be a guest on our show. Ruth Wentz was born to two psychologists. Wow, she must have never gotten away with anything, which she tells me ensured that she would be crazy. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to make you a deal that I will withhold judgment on that till at least the end of the program. She always wanted to be a writer, but her parents insisted that that would mean she would have to live in a trailer park. Not that there's anything wrong with trailer parks. So she went to the University of Texas at Austin, where she majored in Plan B Honors, Liberal Arts, and Pre-Med. So she's pretty smart. She went to medical school at Houston's Baylor College of Medicine and trained to be a nephrologist. Did I get that right?
You did.
Oh, right. Which I just learned is a medical kidney specialist who works in dialysis and transplantation. Dr. Wentz says she practices holistic medicine in the hospital, office, and dialysis setting. And we're going to ask her to explain exactly what that means in just a bit. In her last year of fellowship, she developed her first bout with breast cancer and underwent chemotherapy and radiation. And I assume at that point was cleared.
Yes, for over 10 years.
For over 10 years, wow. And then at 40, she was diagnosed with a second type of breast cancer and underwent mastectomies and reconstruction. Her husband, Jason, is a stay-at-home dad who cares for their two children. In addition to saving lives, telling stories, and raising kids, Ruth has recently begun writing again and has a blog called, I believe, healingandbeinghealed.blogspot.com. Ruth Wentz, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Well, thank you so much, Greg, and thank you for accosting me back in August at the Moth. I am so excited to be here with you.
I mean, there are certain tellers. It happens every now and then where, you know, we have a little storytelling mafia that tends to sit together, and someone finishes a story, and we just look at each other, we're like, go get her! And there's sort of a race, you know, to shove business cards at the poor, perplexed person coming off the stage. But you were very, very nice about being accosted.
Well, I was happy to be discovered, and I'm happy to be accepted and having found my people here.
Well, I think you have. I think you have. And what I do love, and I've said this before on this program, because I wandered in off the street at the Moth with no preparation and won that first night, I have a special place in my heart for people that get on that stage not knowing how they're going to do. And then realize that, yes, they are a storyteller, and you, Ruth, are indeed a storyteller, which is the best compliment I can give from this show. When I saw you at the Moth a few months ago, you seemed so confident and so funny. I never would have guessed it was your first Moth. Were you at all nervous under that veneer of confidence?
Oh, yes. I was quite nervous. But I'd been to a couple Moth story slams before, and just watching people get up there, I just decided that this was something I just had to do. And after you get up there, after that initial taking a deep breath and calming your body down from shaking, after you feel all the love come back at you from the audience, their laughter.
Absolutely.
And they're cheering, you just roll with it.
That is so well put. For me, the absolute worst moment is when they call your name, you wait backstage for a minute, you take that 10-mile walk to the microphone, and then you get into your story and everything's okay.
Absolutely.
You know, and you're right. I often can't see the audience, but it is inexplicable. You are getting feedback from the audience almost. It's not even the noise they're making. You can just feel that they're with you, that they're pulling for you. And you're like, okay, I can do this. I'm just talking to 500 friends.
Absolutely. You hear their gasps. You hear that they're supporting you. They're interested in the story. They're along for this ride. They want you to drive, and you're all going to have a great ride together.
Well, I think that's important for any speaker to remember, is when you stand before an audience, they're not rooting against you. They're rooting for you. And I think that helps all of us feel a little more comfortable. Have you always known you could tell a good story?
Well, Greg, I always wanted to be a writer, but as you referenced in the introduction, my parents quite appropriately wanted me to have a day job. A few years ago, I got onto Facebook and reconnected with a lot of old friends, and that basically created a very safe and supportive audience of people that I could start writing to. And I would first just start writing kind of funny quips and things, or things that I felt touched me or that I thought were important. And then eventually I started writing longer pieces and posting them on Facebook. And again, just getting a lot of good responses and support, and enjoying really eliciting other people's emotions and thoughts. And then people started saying, you know, these are really too long for Facebook. You need to have a blog. And so that's when I started the blog. And now, thanks to people like you supporting me in the Moth and inviting me to storytelling events, now I've become a storyteller.
Well, now, I think the skill and comfort of writing is very, very different than getting in front of an audience and telling a story. They're very different skills and personality types. When did you cross over from writing and writing good stories that people were enjoying to thinking, hey, I can get on a stage and tell this?
When I met you 2 months ago.
Nice of you to say. What is the mission of your blog?
Well, the blog is called healingandbeinghealedblogspot.com, and basically I think I have a unique perspective, having been not only a healer as a doctor working in medicine, but also being a survivor of breast cancer twice. And so it's kind of a unique perspective of what it's like to heal other people, yet also to be someone who is vulnerable and has been ill. Also, it kind of acknowledges that healthcare providers also have a lot of emotions that develop taking care of ill people, and that we need to process those emotions as well.
I'll tell you, I speak from experience, and I believe that there are two types of people in this world: healthy and those that have struggled with truly terrifying illnesses. And I don't think one group can explain to the other what their life is like. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a certain very sharp focus on mortality that happens when you actually think that you may lose your life. And that really puts everything into perspective.
Well, and also just the struggle of trying to maintain a somewhat normal life when illness accompanies you everywhere you go.
Absolutely.
You don't get to leave it at home.
You're so right.
Well, Ruth, your first story reminds us that life is filled with challenges and tough decisions. Will you share it with us?
Oh, I'd love to. Let me take you to Austin, Texas, 1991. Right now, I'm a sophomore at the University of Texas at that time, and Nirvana's Nevermind is at the top of the charts, and grunge is just ruling everywhere, and let me just grab a sip of water here.
Yeah, that's one thing I always tell guests is as soon as you start talking, that's when you're going to need your water. It happens to me every time.
So, you know, it was 1991, and the internet wasn't even widely available. In fact, I had a friend who would go to the library and do this weird thing called email, which she said was saving her a fortune on long distance. And me and my buddies, we'd go down to the Capitol, and we'd protest the Gulf War and lie down in the street. Except by the time the cops came to make arrests, I'd always learned how to book out of there because, you see, I was pre-med. And arrests don't look very good on your medical school application. But the year was going really well, and my grades were good. Had a boyfriend, and I was living at this place called the 21st Street Co-op. And a co-op is a place where up to 100 students are living together. They're cooking and cleaning, doing the chores together, and mostly they're partying together, Greg. So it was really almost too much fun for what
Imagine
I had
that.
To accomplish for my studies, but it was definitely one of the best times in my life. So I'm pre-med, and I'm taking this weed out class. It's organic chemistry. It's over 500 people in the auditorium. And, you know, after getting over that initial terror of the organic chemistry weed out, I actually found that I was pretty good at it. And that I could put molecules together just like snapping Legos. And I was enjoying building chemicals so much for a while, I thought maybe I would become a chemist instead of a doctor. And so one day I'm walking back to my room at the co-op, and I'm carrying this giant organic chemistry textbook with this big buckyball on the cover. I'm going through the shared living area of the suite, and there are a few long-haired dudes hanging out on the couches in there. And one of them kind of raised his head and looked at me and said, "Hey, are you any good at that?" And I was floored because they were talking to me. Because, you see, I really don't know if I was cool at the time. I was kind of like the girl from the Freaks and Geeks show, if you're familiar with that. It was like a army jacket and black leather boots and a 4.0 grade point average. So when I had their attention, I got really excited, and I was able to say honestly, yeah, I'm like really good at this. And the next question from one of them was, "Do you think you can make LSD?" And wow. I was so excited to be, like, included in that gang. I was like, sure. And I think I skipped off to my room and I got some butcher paper and I started sketching out LSD. And I started working the equations backwards and the enzymes, the catalysts, and I was breaking it down into substrates. But funny thing, when you broke it down into the simplest substrates, those compounds were not readily available, probably for a good reason. So, you know, I had to tell the guys, you know, actually, I'm sorry, I don't think I can make LSD, because I don't think I can get the stuff to make it. So they were kind of bored, and they turned back, started talking amongst themselves again, and I think I felt a little bit desperate, so I was like, suddenly just popped out of my mouth, "Well, wait, I think I can make mescaline." And mescaline is the hallucinogen that's in peyote. Well, folks, that party was on again. They were excited. They were so into me. We were having a great time, us friends. And, you know, we were sketching. I was sketching the molecules, making mescaline. I was imagining going into Welch Hall with my vintage Soviet backpack and lifting the Bunsen burners and flasks and glassware that I would need to make it. Then we talked about, well, where were we going to make it now that we had this big project together? And we came up with a great idea that we would use the bathroom. We had the downstairs of the suite had four bedrooms and a shared bathroom, and we could just use the bathtub to make a very large batch of hallucinogens in a shared living area, because what could possibly go wrong? So we're having a grand old time making these plans, and this was when my boyfriend kind of sauntered back in through the suite back from his class and saw that there was a lot of a buzz going around and said, what's up? And I just ran over to him and squealed, we're going to make mescaline in the bathtub. And he did not look happy at all. And he very quietly excused us, and we went back to my room. He sat me down and he looked at me and he said, you know how you want to be a doctor? You know how you want to go to Harvard? Well, if you do this with these guys, you're not going to do either one. You're going to go to jail for manufacturing with intent to distribute. And I really didn't want to hear that because I was having so much fun at the time. But then he looked at me and he said what I really felt and what really rang true, which was, plus, you know, these guys are just using you anyway. So here we are 25 years later. I did get to become a doctor, and I did get accepted to Harvard for residency, and I did marry that very wise and cautious boyfriend. And I never made mescaline in anyone's bathtub, but I have found great friends who love me for the nerd I am, even without any free drugs.
Wow, Ruth, what an amazing story. What an amazing story. I got to say, I think you made the right call, and you clearly dodged a bullet. And you know, good job on marrying Jason. He sounds like a wise and kind soul.
He's protected me many times.
Wow, wow. Looking back through the lens of time and experience, what would you say to that young woman in 1991 facing such a strong temptation?
I would say run. No, just kidding. In all seriousness, I would say to my former self, you know, you got to get some of the confidence and self-respect that you're going to have as a grown person. You know, it's so hard for younger people trying to fit in, and they're so self-conscious.
It is hard when someone says, we want you to be part of our group. You know, we think you are so cool. All you got to do is just make a bathtub full of mescaline. Yeah, that's all. That's all. Yeah, but I can understand how, as a young person, being included, that is everything, you know, and particularly until you grow into yourself. If your future husband hadn't been there to give you his input, do you think you might have made a different decision, or do you think you would have caught yourself before things got out of control?
Well, that's really a scary thought, and you know, if this story was a choose-your-own-adventure, it would really have a lot of possible bad endings, including the big vat of hallucinogens in the shared public space and the jail aspects. But
I'm glad you didn't do it, but I really want to hear that story, too.
Right.
I think you just need to make up a fictional story, because I really want to know what happened with that full bathtub.
There's a lot of crazy things that can happen.
Or I can just see one of your roommates going and saying, oh, nice, someone filled the bathtub for me.
Yeah, and ending up in a mental hospital. But hopefully I would have gotten the sense to put the brakes on that idea.
So what do you want our listeners to take away from this story? And for those, you know, particularly those who might be feeling a little lonely and prone to temptation?
Well, I think everyone needs to know that what's really cool is just being yourself. And, you know, if your gut feeling is that something is wrong, just stand up and say no, and people will respect you for that.
Wow, I do like that. You know, you've gained quite a bit of wisdom in 26 years, I think.
You should see me in the future.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I hope we'd have you on before 26 more years, but let's make a date for 26 years from now. Well, listeners, this is a reminder that this is KPFT's Fall Pledge Drive. I know you love the stories we bring you every week, but this station is listener-sponsored. We cannot make it without you, so please call 713-5000.
526-5738 and contribute to show your support for So What's Your Story? If you call in, you might just get to talk with our favorite executive producer and the creator of So What's Your Story, Dr. Hank Rybacek. Hank, for those who don't know about us, can you give us a little history of the whole So What's Your Story family?
I'd be happy to, but I want our listeners to know that with a $100 donation, Ruth will give you one of her water pipes. I just wanted to, mention that. She has several with her, and I just wanted to mention that.
How much for a bathtub?
Do we have time for a 30-second story, though? Because when you hear what I'm about to tell you, it'll knock your socks off. You mentioned Mafia Teller earlier. Did you know that Paul Topikian is now calling us the Mafia Tellers? Did you know that?
Several people have come up to me and mentioned to me that I'm in the Mafia.
This is unbelievable. When you and I told the story a couple of months ago, you and I told stories. And afterwards, Paul came up and said, boy, we were worried because you Mafia Tellers are always up there. Mafia Tellers? What are you talking about?
It's very kind,
Paul. He said, oh, yeah, we have a nickname for you. I said, for me? He said, oh, yeah, you're Don Hankolino. I said, what are you talking about? Where did this all come from?
He says,
let me tell you what happens. When there's a teller up there that you really like, sometimes you'll go up there and intercept him or her to me. But usually you're turning to Greg or somebody else. You have your arms crossed, and we just hear you saying things like, Greg, go get her and make her an offer she can't refuse. Go get her now.
We picture you
saying that. So here we go. We are the Mafia Tellers of Houston. I am very proud of that.
I want you to know the reason why I do it is because I'm scared of Hank.
If you saw the overpowering physique that I own, that it would make totally good sense.
You and Marlon Brando, buddy.
But let me tell you, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about this great show. And it is a gem of a show, as Greg mentioned a little earlier. You know, we really started as an open journal in 2006. Early 2007. I was a guest on a program, and I even forgot the name of the program, but it was on an open journal. And the person who hosted me quit. I don't think I had anything to do with it, but God only knows. But a few days later, at the time, our program director, Ernesto Aguilar, gave me a call and said, you know, you sounded pretty good that time you were on the show, and we don't have a host. Would you be interested in giving it a shot? I said, I guess. Okay. Because he knew I had some radio experience. And he said, it's an open journal, so you can do pretty much whatever you want to do. And I said, well, what I'd really like to do is to have people come on and tell stories. I want to do a live storytelling show. And at first he said, well, that's sort of an interesting idea. I'm not real sure people will get into it. And I said, oh, trust me. So we did it once a month. It was the fourth Friday of every month. And then people said, you know what, Hank, it's pretty good. Let's do it every week. And we did. I was moved to 6 a.m. on Monday mornings. And you can imagine what it was like at 6 a.m. Monday mornings. I was here bright and early, but we had a hard time getting guests. And then we were moved to 10 o'clock on Thursday nights. And then we have this coveted, wonderful 8 o'clock slot on Wednesday evening. Greg, you and Warren and Mary joined me a few years, 2.5 years ago, and Shannon's been with us, and we really have built a tremendous team. Shannon knows this show in its earlier day, and now that you and Warren and Mary and these fabulous guests that we're securing every week, I have to tell you, I am. It's a labor of love, and it's for good reason, because I love everything and everyone associated with this magnificent program.
I got to say, Hank, you know, at the risk of being sappy, I do too. I am so proud of the people that we work with, the guests that come on, the engineers who work so hard to make, you know, this show heard and publicized. I just couldn't feel better about this group or the show that you've created, because there is no other show like it. Did it ever occur to you when you were coming down here at, oh my God, 6 a.m? I don't even know what 6 a.m. is like. I never see it.
Didn't have to wait in line in Chrissy's Donuts.
I bet.
That was the most important thing. But, you know, it was, I felt very optimistic because I knew what storytelling was all about. It's a way of plugging in without plugging anything in.
But did you think we'd still be going strong a decade later?
I didn't know about that. I didn't really look in the future saying, I hope this keeps going. I just took it literally 1 week at a time. And I knew that every week, really worked. And every week got better than another.
And you know what?
So I'm not at all surprised that we've
lasted. I feel like we're still doing that. Every week we learn something. The host learns something. Hopefully we make the guests feel more comfortable and prepared. But I feel like every week we're presenting a tighter and tighter show.
Absolutely. And, you know, we want our listeners to know that we need them, because you can't. You can't depend on the other guy. 713-526-5738, Jam KPFT, or get online to kpft.org, go to donations, and then tell us how you want to pay. Don't use my credit card. And then scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you designate as the one that you want to support, the icon of excellence here at Pacifica Radio. Just get online or in line. I don't care if you're out of line. I don't even care if you're a lineup. Just get it done. Whatever you can give to us, we would greatly appreciate it, because what we don't want you to do is to tune in one day and hear... That's right.
That doesn't
silence.
Sound so
that
good.
Is not something that you want to do. So, again, 713-526-5738, and we will love you for life. Thank you.
And Hank, thank you for letting me be a part of it, because when I came in this program as a guest 2 years ago and was sitting where Ruth is sitting right now, you know, I was a nervous guest, and it never did occur to me that I would one day be a host, and it would be my job to make guests feel comfortable. So thank you for giving me this opportunity. And for sharing a bit of the history with our listeners. And I want to say to the listeners, if you're a regular listener to this program and you love a good story, I hope you'll really pay attention to what Ruth said earlier, that, you know, it occurred to her that she had stories to tell. And she started writing them. And people said, yeah, these are good. So if you have a story that you want to share, send us an email, go onto our Facebook page, let us know and say, hey, I think I've got a story, you know, and I'd like to be on your program. You know, and we can't have everybody on, but we do our very best to get as many, you know, listeners on and storytellers on, and we would love to hear your story. So please log on into our Facebook page. And you are listening to So What's Your Story on 90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. My guest storyteller is Dr. Ruth Wentz. When introducing Ruth, I mentioned that I accosted her as she was leaving the stage after her very first moth appearance, and I learned this technique from our very own Shannon McKerchy, who I met as I was exiting the stage after my first moth appearance. I was shocked that instead of booze, the audience seemed to actually like it. They were clapping. Little did I know that the woman handing me a card and inviting me to appear on a show called So What's Your Story would become a valued friend and a respected colleague.
Aw, thank you, Greg.
And I mean
that. That means a lot. You know, and I lived and breathed So What's Your Story for a year and 5 months, and I wouldn't have known about the station at all if it wasn't for So What's Your Story.
Wow.
Connecting us through stories and connecting the community, it's a beautiful way of using an hour of community radio.
Yeah, so. Actually, Shannon accosted me with her resume,
Woo!
Remember?
Yeah, that was a fun story, too.
We accost you. We're an accosting group.
Well, if there's one thing that I hope the listeners get from this...
I just, you know, I love the fact that we do that.
Yeah.
It's so unique.
Being polite is probably not going to get you very far in this world. If you see an opportunity, you just have to go for it.
Get over here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We just happened to be at the same Walgreens at the same time. Getting an envelope
right?
for the resume.
Wait, right?
Shannon, I thought you told me you'd been following him for 3 days
yes.
and finally cornered him in the Walgreens. That's what I thought you said.
That's not the version of the story, Greg. We agree.
I'm sorry. Well, tonight we are lucky to have Shannon filling in for our regular accomplice. Our regular engineer, Nicole Rocherlin, who we miss and value. Nicole, we do look forward to seeing you here next week. But it's a comfortable position for Shannon because she was our longtime engineer before becoming the afternoon operations coordinator at KPFT. And she's the one that often gets you home through traffic and bad weather and everything you need to know during your evening drive time. So thanks for joining us and making sure the audience can hear us, Shannon.
It is such a pleasure to be with y'all. It's great fun to be back with the team.
Well, thanks to our guest storytellers, the tireless work of our team, and our growing presence across the internet, our audience continues to grow each week. Shannon, what do you think makes this city tune in to hear great stories week after week after week?
Well, I think the stories that we broadcast help connect us to our community on the human level. You know, we expose ourselves in a particular way, and we tell so much about ourselves through stories and identity. It means a lot, and just having that human raw element out there, that's, I mean, I can't tell you how many of the stories I've heard on So What's Your Story has stuck with me more than anything.
It's funny that you say that, because one thing I found about myself, I have told stories on stage behind this microphone that I've never told anybody.
Right?
I can't imagine just sitting down over coffee and telling someone these stories, but somehow in front of the audience and in front of the microphones, there it goes, you know? Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Well, this city is absolutely filled with storytellers. Will you let folks know where they can hear some of them?
Well, to start, everyone needs to follow us on Facebook, and please share our page with your friends.
Yes.
Click like on our page so everyone knows you like us. You really, really, really like us.
Thank you, Sally Field.
And we have program clips on YouTube and all of our past So What's Your Story programs on the Houston Storytellers website. That's www.houstonstorytellers.org. Just go to the radio program link on their site and enjoy. The Guild is at also our proud sponsor. Their swaps meet the fourth Tuesday of every month at Temple Emmanuel. That's 1500 Sunset. Also, don't miss our friends at the Moth. That's at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month every month. So enjoy the storytelling community in Houston.
Thank you, Shannon. It is so nice to have you back this week.
Well, thank you so much.
Also, the National Night of Celebration Storytelling Telebration will be held on November 18th at 8 p.m. at the Black Lab. And you can get a good beer there, too. Get the particulars on the Guild's website. Again, that is HoustonStorytellers.org. And you can hear every one of our previous programs on there. So you can just, you know, next hurricane, that's a great activity to do. You can just stay in your house for 5 days and listen to all of our 300-plus episodes. 300-plus episodes. That's a lot of great stories. I am excited to tell you that the Moth Story Grand Slam, which was postponed after our unwelcome guest Harvey, is rescheduled for Friday night, November 3rd, at the University of Houston's Cullen Auditorium. The Grand Slam is made up of winners of the monthly Moth competition. Last year's show was a total blast for participants and audience members alike. Hank and I are two of the tellers, and we would love it if you would come by after the show and say hi to us. We'll all be in the lobby meeting people, and we would love to meet you. And if you like the stories, if you like this program, I guarantee the Grand Slam is going to be a very fun night. You can find out more information about tickets at themoth.org. This is Greg Audell, and you are listening to So What's Your Story with my guest, Dr. Ruth Wentz. Ruth, you've chosen a career that is not only challenging, but it also comes with a fair amount of danger. Is that something you thought much about before you entered the profession?
No, not at all, Greg. Before I started medical school, the most daunting thing I could think of would be having to stay up all night, because I'm still not good at that. But being in the medical profession, you see that there's a lot of actual danger. You can be exposed to communicable diseases in the air, like tuberculosis, or as we saw with the Ebola scare back in 2014, you can be exposed to things that can be quite deadly. You can be exposed to violent and dangerous patients as well. Even as a medical student, I was almost assaulted in the psych ER of Ben Taub, but that's another story.
Wow. Wow. Well, your second story will enlighten folks as to the danger, some of the dangers you face in the medical field. Would you share your second story with us?
Oh, I'd be happy to. In 1995, I was a medical student rotating in internal medicine at Ben Taub General Hospital here in Houston. And the unspoken rule of a county hospital is that the indigent can get care there, but it also allows an opportunity for some less experienced persons in training to have some more hands-on experience. So it was early morning, and I was drawing the laboratories on my patient, drawing her blood, when I did the unthinkable, and I stuck myself in the hand through my glove with the dirty needle. And I took the glove off, and yep, I was bleeding. It had punctured the skin. Now, my patient there was not exactly a model citizen. Her admitting diagnosis was cocaine-induced rhabdomyolysis, which in layman's terms is having smoked enough crack to literally melt your muscles. So this was pretty concerning that her blood was now circulating in my body. And my eyes filled with tears, and I went running to our team room where we kind of had our organizational things and our board with our patient lists. And I found my scrawny, nerdy intern, who he was the one senior to me, and he held me and comforted me maybe a little bit too long. And then after that, he took me down to occupational health, where for them it's quite routine dealing with needle sticks. So they explained to me that they would test my blood right away for a communicable disease panel, things like HIV and hepatitis, and that they would test my source patient for that as well. But there would be several days of waiting for those results. And in the interim, what I really needed to do was to just assume that I had HIV. And so what the protocol was they gave me a cocktail of antiretroviral medications. So I literally began to live like someone who had the chronic viral communicable illness, HIV. And I took several medications several times a day, all of which made me feel quite ill. And I looked at the world like I had HIV. I fended off the amorous advances of my then fiance, and I looked at things around the apartment like a toothbrush or a razor as now potential deadly weapons if they could pass on the virus. And I began looking at my future, which had been so bright you had to wear shades before, but if I had HIV, it was going to look quite different. There were certain fields of medicine that you could not practice if you had HIV for concern that you might actually expose your patient if you were to cut yourself, such as surgery. And I'd always wanted to be a mom, but I didn't know now if I had HIV, would I be able to have children? Would my children be ill? It was really quite a terrible series of days there waiting, and the days were passing like molasses waiting to go back to occupational health. And finally the day came, and I went back to my occupational health appointment, and first thing was good news. Your patient did not have HIV or hepatitis. And so that was a great sigh of relief.
Wow.
But then they said, well, there is just one thing. And I said, what's that? And they said, well, your patient tested positive for syphilis. And so I was kind of confused and said, so what does that mean? And the answer was, drop your drawers. And so that's how this good girl got 2.4 million units of benzathine penicillin in both tuchuses and was treated for syphilis without even having any fun.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's horrifying on every level.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a few questions for you about this.
Yeah, me too.
First off, you said in the story that you were fending off your boyfriend's amorous advances. So does that mean that he did not know what you had gone through about the needle stick?
Well,
or maybe he didn't care. He loved you so much.
I mean, it's hard to, I'm not going to speak for him, but I guess that there might be some disbelief, like, come on, you're not sick. You know, you had the needle stick and you're going to be all right. And
well, did you talk to your friends or your close circle about it, or did you keep it to yourself mostly?
you know, it's hard because it's not something that you really want to tell a lot of people, because the truth is that if you do contract hepatitis C or HIV from a needle stick, it's something that's going to affect you for a long time. Although in 1995, hepatitis C wasn't as curable as it is now, and HIV was not as manageable either, but still the long-term consequences are not something that you want widely out in your professional life.
If it has, how did the accidental needle stick affect you in the long term? I understand how it affected you in the short term, but looking back on it 22 years later, does it still have some role in your psyche? Or?
Well, I think just like my experiences with cancer, you know, these kind of experiences really, as I said earlier, pull your mortality into sharp focus. And they do have some gifts. You know, I like to say that these experiences help us to quote-unquote not sweat the small stuff. You know, it's hard to be irritated with a line at Starbucks or some traffic when you're just happy to be alive.
But and how sad for those people that have something horrible to happen to them and they don't gain anything from it. They don't gain any insight. I mean, that's pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, just being a healthcare provider, having these kind of scary experiences do help keep your empathy and you know, the kind part of your care alive. You know, it's
important.
It's so hard for us now. We're so pressured by time and administration and costs and data entry and computers that, you know, it's really important to keep the human element alive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking as a frequent patient, you know, that bit of kindness means more than anything else when you're in a hospital and facing a scary situation. Hank, you said you had a question for?
No, that was an amazing story, though.
Really, it really, really was. Both of your stories were amazing.
An incredible story.
Thank you.
I have a goosebump test, and I got goosebumps on both your stories. So,
the emotional shift in that story.
Yeah.
The fear, the elation, the you know, the perplexing notion of what's going to happen to me. And, you know, I don't know. How do you feel about a health professional telling you that you may have HIV, you'll have to live that way for a few days until we find out, have a good night. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because is that information that was required? I guess it was, because you had to take precaution. I understand that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a thing, this post-exposure prophylaxis. I think there's even an acronym for it, you know, PEP.
Yeah,
but yeah, there's a lot of things, you know, that we say and do in the medical profession that we don't think much of, but for the person hearing them, it's completely devastating.
Hey, let me tell you, one of the worst calls I've ever gotten was on December 23rd. When my doctor's office called and said, yeah, your test results came in. The doctor was wondering if you could come in today and go over them. I was like, December 23rd. Yeah, not a good sign. Not a good sign. You never want your doctor to call you to have you come in. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Yeah. Well, look what time it is, my friends. It is time for Tips for the Teller, a tip that will help you develop your storytelling skills and a whole lot more. How often do you get in your car with absolutely no idea where you're headed or what road to take?
Me. I do that all the time. Were you asking?
You call us and we remind you where you're going,
right.
Okay, Hank.
That's
we said
right.
We weren't going to talk about that publicly.
I gave Custer his directions.
That's why we program Waze into your phone, Hank. But wouldn't that be a foolish way to begin a trip if you just get in your car and you start driving with no destination in mind? So why would you tell a story without knowing your exact destination? Plan your story by starting with the takeaway message that you want to leave with your audience. Think about what's important to the audience and what's important to you to convey to them. The ending is the most important point of the story. This is the message we want to deliver and the one that will linger with your audience. You wouldn't want to ride with a driver who had no idea where they were going, and your audience shouldn't be expected to listen to a story without a destination in mind. because this isn't really a story. It's more of a meandering stream of consciousness without a specific destination. We always tell people stories have beginnings, they have middles, and they have ends. If they don't have those three components, it may be a lot of interesting words, but it is not a story, my friends. Knowing where you will want to end up will give you a confidence, and your audience is going to pick up on that. The audience picking up on that is going to make you feel more comfortable. So again, friends, keep your destination in mind while you're creating your story. And really, that's true with anything you do in life. You don't just start cooking and saying, I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff together and see what happens. Not unless you're a much better cook than I am. Ruth, other than your moth performances, have you done much public speaking?
Well, I've done a lot of medical speaking, and I've done a lot of teaching. I was a chief resident in Los Angeles, which basically meant I was, for the year, in charge of the residents' education and arranging conferences and running a lot of conferences, giving a lot of lectures. And I'm now an associate professor voluntarily for Baylor. So I have a lot of experience with PowerPoint.
PowerPoints and storytelling.
No. So I'm really enjoying now giving this different type of speaking. Honestly, the audience is a lot more awake.
I would imagine they laugh a lot more, too.
They do. And you can really have a lot more fun and really enjoy connecting with them a lot more than lecturing to them.
Hank, what's the greatest mistake that you've seen speakers make? And how would you advise others to avoid a similar situation?
I don't even know where to begin. I honestly don't.
We've only got 14 minutes.
First of all, I just want you to know that your tip for the teller was a brilliant one because I like.
Wow! Thank you.
Well, you know,
you got that
I
recorded, right,
way.
Shannon?
Well,
he said I was brilliant.
I look at it this way: it's sort of like a gymnast. You got to stick the end, right? You got to make sure that end is
right
to get the points, right? But you know, one of the most difficult things I think that people go through in public speaking, and it's not going to sound very profound, although maybe it will. It has something to do with delivery. People have to have something to say. I know, sounds ridiculous, but you know, our opinions in a public speech don't matter. You can't make up information. You can't
unless you work in the White House. You just can't
make up stuff. And I think that one of the biggest mistakes people make, honestly, you can learn how to organize a speech, but learning how to get verbal support, how do you get the information to reinforce your assertions? How do you come across as a credible, articulate, proficient speaker who has something to offer the audience? And I think that most public speakers in today's world don't realize that you have to be knowledgeable and competent in order to be a proficient public speaker. That's
right.
The truth. So I would say read a lot of magazines, read a lot of great classics, know things, have a good sense of meaning of words, and be able to guide your listeners toward a really productive destination by understanding the power of organization, but even more importantly, the creation of image.
One of my absolute favorite quotes is from Sojourner Truth. She said, "Don't speak to say something. Speak because you got something to say." You know, and I feel
That's
like
right.
That kind of sums up.
We got something to say as long as people will give us a call at 713-526-5738.
I'm sorry, what was that number?
5735735738. I'm not organized. You have to be organized. 713-526-5738. Jam KPFT. You can't allow the other guy to do it because they won't. We need you. We are doing nothing here in terms of making any money. But you know what? You guys don't call. You don't listen in and say, well, what do you expect from a bunch of programmers who don't make any money? Of course, it's a terrible show. Because you want excellence. And we try to give it to you week in and week out. But we need your help, folks. Genuinely. 713-526-5738-JAM-KPFT. Please. We really do need your help.
And next week, Dr. Hank will be your host, and he will bring one of his favorite shows of the year, a Halloween special. And if I know him, he's going to bring all these little noise-making gadgets.
I will. Candy corn.
We try and hide them from him throughout the year.
Yeah, impossible.
And he is going to have an all-star lineup. The one, the only, Kiki Maroon, who's been a guest on this show before, Jay Staley, and our friend Kent Keith will be on, and I guarantee you it's going to be a great show.
And
not to put any pressure on you.
No, but listen, they're all great shows, and that's the truth. But, you know, every once in a while, it's like the stars tellers are lined up, and we got great tellers next week. And they got some really great scary stories, and you know, some are kind of funny, some are a little creepy, but they're going to be a lot of fun. And you're right, I'm going to have noisemakers. It's a Halloween special, man.
Are you saying their stories are creepy or the guests are creepy?
Well, I think that the guests have their creepy moments, but I think the stories in particular are the creepiest ever. And then you have me, who's,
well,
you know, Mr. Creep.
I'm
and
not
then,
saying
and,
anything
and
about
I'm,
that.
I bring in candy corn, I've got noisemakers, and not only that, I've got some music. We're going to be playing some goofy music, very scary music.
Guys,
ready.
Be ready
and
for
I'm going
this.
To be doing some imitations, too.
I suggest you have a bowl of Halloween candy available
oh,
so
yeah.
you can really get in the spirit.
Yeah.
I definitely won't be missing that. If Dr. Hank and his guests don't satiate your need for Halloween stories, then mark your calendars for Saturday, October 28th, when Skyline Screamers Ghost Tales Under the Stars returns. Oh, God. Bring your picnic basket, blanket, chairs, and bug spray to Marmarian Park, located on Heights Boulevard at 18th Street. Storytellers from the Houston Storytellers Guild will share their favorite ghost stories from
NTM!
7 to 9.
NTM!
He's really starting to creep me out. He's just beginning. We're still a week away from this show. For adults and kids who like to be scared, rain or shine, unless like Harvey comes back or something. But other than that, we will be there. Ruth, are you a fan of ghost stories?
Oh, absolutely. I spent my childhood reading Alfred Hitchcock and Stephen King.
Mother! Sorry.
I'm not going to go to sleep tonight, I don't think. I got to tell you, my grandmother got me into ghost stories. She tells stories. She lived to 100, and she told stories about when she was a young Mormon girl and flying caskets in a house she was in, and she was dead serious. But my favorite one, she had something of an arranged marriage and didn't like her husband, my grandfather, one bit. And after he died, she said she woke up, and he was sitting by her bed. And she looked at him, and she said, I didn't like you when you're alive. I don't want to see you when you're dead. Go away, you damn ghost. And she never saw him again.
It worked.
Never saw him again.
Oh, it's time to take a shower. Yeah.
Oh, I fear next week's show. Now, if you're looking for something fun to do this weekend, it's the last weekend of two great shows at Main Street Theater. Enemies is on their main stage, and the other show, Click Clack Moo, is for children at their downstairs match location. Their downtown match location. For information, click on over to MainStreetTheater.com. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Ruth Wentz, for being with me tonight. Now, one thing I didn't ask you is, how old are your children?
They're two boys, 10 and 16.
Oh, so what? I was thinking they were smaller kids. So what do they think about you being on and mom becoming a performer, or are they not paying much attention to it?
Oh, they think it's pretty cool, but they're really kind of disappointed I'm not home tonight again, since I was at the Moth last night. But...
Well, I got to say, you must be doing something right if at 10 and 16 they want mom home. I mean, you must be doing a lot of things right.
They're good boys.
Wow. Are they? Do you see future storytellers in them?
We'll try to cultivate it.
Yeah? Have you bought it? Well, I don't know about the 10-year-old, but have you bought the 16-year-old to the Moth, or is that something you're thinking about doing, or is it a little too racy still?
No, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, we love having young storytellers on the show, and that's something that Hank has done from the very beginning, and particularly junior high students. And I'm telling you, these kids can tell stories.
And they'll be back in the spring. We got them for March and April, Johnson Middle School.
Johnson Middle School.
They are wonderful. They really are.
And I love the energy that comes in. And they're really very similar to the adult tellers we have, is that they often start out nervous. By the time they're telling their stories, they are like pros.
Oh,
and then they just saunter out of the studio, you know,
you have to
like they're Jackie
down
Gleason.
Because they sit in here, and right before you're ready to go on, they go, this is so cool. Wow, this is so cool. Oh, my God, this is so cool. Right?
Yeah. And I have to say, I've even had my 4-year-old godson on the show where he got to announce the birth of his baby sister. And whenever I see him now, whenever we do something, I'm, what do you want to do? He's like, I want to go to the radio show. I want to be on the radio. So I'm hoping that we have a future storyteller and a future budding radio host. Think that demographic is too young, or can we do it, Hank?
Oh, we can do it.
Well, Hank, I'm looking forward to your show next week. Dr. Ruth, I look forward to having you back on again. You have been a completely delightful and thought-provoking guest, which is something we want. We want to amuse, we want to entertain, but we also want our guests to leave them with something to think about. And the last thing I will leave you with, my friends, is asking you to call 713-526-5738 and support this amazing program that I am so proud to be a part of. Dr. Hank, thank you for sitting in with us tonight.
You are welcome.
It's always a lot of fun when we have you join us and we do kind of a duo show. And Ruth, thank you for your stories, your insights, your life experiences. I'm going to be thinking about this and a bathtub full of LSD tonight and pondering those things.
And just to clarify, I do not make drugs. I do not use drugs. I am a doctor of good health and good mental standing.
Okay, well, there goes that fundraising plan out the window.
That's fine, Ruth. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Thank you,
We're
Texas
fine.
Medical Board.
Yeah. Well, we have the Vinyl Avenger coming up very shortly with Into the Darkness. They are another class act from KPFT. Make great radio a part of your everyday. And while you're driving home, if you need a break from the day, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving a great story, and we will keep bringing them to you. Above all, be good to each other. Tip well. Help when you can. Mary, Warren, Hank, Nicole, Teddy, Tanya, and Floyd the Wonder Dog, and I will forever be reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends.
Gather around, KPFT listeners from all over the greater Houston area. We're inviting you to a unique, one-time show of epic proportions.
Join us for the second Saturday KPFT fundraiser, where KPFT's own free minstrel show and friends present a spectacular spectacle at Station Theater, Houston's home for long-form improvised comedy.
We'll see you there from 6:30 to 8 p.m. on the second Saturday of the month. Station Theater is located at 1230 Houston Avenue. Parking is free down Dart Street and at the tire shop.
Visit stationtheater.com/KPFT for more details. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Hello, dear listeners. Today we want somebody else's money for a change. That's right. We want available money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting puts aside a stack of money every year for nonprofit educational community broadcasters like KPFT. We want to be sure that KPFT is ready and able to receive our fair share before the politicians slam the door shut. But, that's right, there's always a but. To qualify for this money, a crucial requirement is that the KPFT Community Advisory Board conduct a survey of KPFT listeners every year. All we need is 2 minutes of your time. You can help KPFT be ready to get somebody else's money by going to kpft.org and completing the short survey. It's 2 minutes, dear listeners, just 2 minutes. Go to www.kpft.org. Click on the survey button and complete the short survey. We thank you, dear friends. Thank you so very much. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Community is all about connection, and KPFT is seeking local organizations, businesses, and individuals to participate in our Community Partner Program. Community partners help KPFT by supporting station initiatives, reducing our pledge drives, and being key contributors to our success. As a community partner, your organization or business becomes invested in a richer way in KPFT and helps to keep local independent media flowing. Interested in being a community partner? Well, contact us by email at partners@kpft.org. Thanks for your interest in our Community Partners program. This is KPFT Houston.